First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Standing against hate. Good morning. We're live from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we're going to tell you about a vigil for unity and hope this week that you can attend after hate messages rattle the 904. Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, how local veterans exposed to burn pits overseas can access medical care. It's through a new law called the PACT Act. We'll tell you about it. That and more all coming up this morning. But first this hour, Jacksons of all faiths and backgrounds are standing together with this city's Jewish community. They're speaking out against hateful anti-Semitic messages that were displayed across the city during Florida-Georgia weekend. Now, tomorrow night, you can join them as the community rallies against hate in a candlelight vigil downtown for unity and hope. We've got a preview here in studio as we welcome Kyle Reese, Executive Director of One Jax. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And also joining us, Parvez Ahmed with the Interfaith Foundation of Northeast Florida.
Thank you, Melissa.
Good to have you both. Already getting calls, everybody, and we want you to add your voice to the conversation. Give us a call now as we talk about this week's rally against hate and division, 549-2937. Call us up. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. Already getting your comments on Facebook. So most people listening to this know that over Florida-Georgia weekend, multiple anti-Semitic messages were displayed across the community on highway overpasses, projected onto the football stadium and a downtown building. Let's begin with you, Kyle Reese. One Jax, which represents people of all faiths and no faith in this city, is condemning these messages, and you're planning a response. Tell us about it.
Well, we always feel like while words matter and it's important to make a statement, we always want to combine a statement with an action. So we want to send a very clear signal tomorrow night that this community will not stand for this. I think we need to acknowledge that hate is real and it is present. And tomorrow is not only a stand against it, but it's a real picture of who I think we want to be and move toward as a community.
There will be a vigil downtown tomorrow evening. People can join?
Yes, 5:30 tomorrow night at James Weldon Johnson Park. We would love to have you there. We'll have leaders from the interfaith community, community leaders, and of course, leaders from the Jewish community.
549-2937. Parvez Ahmed, you're with the Interfaith Foundation of Northeast Florida, also taking part.
Yes, Interfaith Center for Northeast Florida. What One Jax has put together with this vigil is important because symbolism is important. Putting out statements in solidarity with a community that has been targeted is important. But what is also important is being proactive about this issue. And what we have done at the Interfaith Center for Northeast Florida, and you can go to our website, interfaithfaithnefl.org, and check us out, that we have been building bridges with faith communities through events, through conversations, through sharing a meal for the last several years. And I think all of that helps in building a sense of community. But we also have to be real about this point in time. We are seeing since 2016 a steady rise in anti-Semitic incidents, which is coinciding with a steady rise in hate crimes. And all of that is just not a coincidence. It is based on the political environment that we have, the normalization of hate, particularly right now on Twitter with Elon Musk. After Elon Musk purchased Twitter, it has completely gone berserk on that website. So all of those things are contributing to the general atmosphere of hate and division and discord that we see in our community. And it is important for organizations like One Jax and Interfaith Center for Northeast Florida to stand with our community and push back.
Mm-hmm. This is important, but the deeper issue, Kyle, as Parvez says, is this is happening not just in Jacksonville, but all over the country. Just a week or so ago, you appeared on this program talking about One Jax pushing back against the rise of white nationalism in America, because that is tied to the incidents we saw in the city over the weekend. Can you share more about why One Jax is so concerned about this?
Sure. We are concerned when any community in our country, any group begins to prize its place over the others. And so there's an alarming rise in white Christian nationalism that tells a very false and incomplete story about who we are as a country, even back to our founding. And as that false story and myth grows, it begins to champion certain ideas and people over others. And history is full of examples where this does not end well. And so we want to speak very clearly. What used to be, I would argue, whispered in the corners is now spoken of. And just a few weeks ago, there was a how-to book published on Christian nationalism, how Christians, in that author's view, should rule America. And we see the danger in that, the danger not only to our country, not only to our democracy, but as a practicing Christian, the danger to the Christian faith, because it is antithetical to the way of Jesus. So we've been very concerned with that and will continue to share that story and conversation.
Let's go to your calls now. If you're just tuning in, our guests in studio, Kyle Reese, Executive Director at One Jax, Parviz Ahmed, Interfaith Foundation of Northeast Florida. The community will rally tomorrow night downtown at James Weldon Johnson Park, a candlelight vigil of unity and hope, standing against hate in this city. This after anti-Semitic and hateful messages were displayed around town over the weekend. And give us a call now, 549-2937. Scott on the north side. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity here. I agree with y'all goal, but I have a problem here being an African-American and then a subject matter expert there with African-American concerns. Why are we not talking about the injustice that take place every day in the African-American community? And we talking about almost 200 years here, right here in Jacksonville. I was here when Axe Hamner Saturday took place. Yes, I was one block away during Axe Handle Saturday, but no one is talking about that when it comes to the African-American community. We deal with this oppression every day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Scott. And on Facebook, Mike adds to that sentiment, Parviz. He says, part of us coming together as a community includes removing all vestiges of racism and oppression, including the Confederate monuments, names, and markers around town. It also includes giving Black voters their constitutionally protected voting rights by having racially just and legal city council districts. That's happening, too. A big fight over redistricting in the city. Plaintiffs say the city council drew the lines in a racially gerrymandered way. A federal judge has ordered the council to redraw the maps. And, you know, it was striking, I have to say, to see after these anti-Semitic messages went up around town, several local officials took to social media to condemn these anti-Semitic hateful messages. But some of these same officials refused to take a stand on whether to take down the markers of racism and oppression that are embedded in these Confederate monuments. So what about this?
Well, there are a couple of thoughts that I want to share. Number one is, if you look at hate crime statistics, nearly 25% of hate crime in this country is directed towards our African-American brothers and sisters. And it is, as the caller said, this is nothing new. This has been the over 200-year legacy of this country, and it continues at this moment. The second part, as you mentioned, Melissa, is absolutely true, that when we talk about hate crimes, they are not unconnected to the broader political atmosphere that we are experiencing at this point. There have been anti-Semitic messages from Republican leadership that has not been condemned by the Republican leadership. Even just a few days ago, Donald Trump tweeted out saying, I'm paraphrasing over here, that Jews are not sufficiently loyal. And that was not condemned. Racism is rampant in on Twitter right now, with after Elon Musk purchased it. That has not been called out. In fact, the National Republican Party was celebrating Kanye, Elon, and Trump. So without taking into account the political atmosphere that we are experiencing at this moment and its impact on the rise of hate, we will be simply dancing around the issue. I mentioned that since 2016, hate crime and anti-Semitic incidents are on the rise in this country. 2016 also marks the rise of Donald Trump, the MAGA movement, and the resurgence of white Christian nationalism. So they are not coincidental. Politics is part of the rise of hate and hate crimes in this country.
Kyle Reese, do you agree with that?
I do.
Or not?
I do agree with that. And I think sort of in the body politic now, there is this idea that there is one way to win in an election, and it's a race to the bottom. And the only hope I see is that we, the people, finally say enough is enough. And we elect people who are not ready to say that the ends justify the means, but just the opposite, that the means give us a place at the table to govern and lead.
And just one quick thought on that. The fight for democracy and the fight against hate are interconnected. They're not two separate things. If we preserve our democracy, we will be able to overcome hate, because most Americans do not want to live under this kind of circumstances.
Millions of Americans feel our system of government is threatened on both sides of the aisle. That said, what happens if after an election that is free and fair, millions of Americans who've been propagandized into believing the elections aren't legit refuse to accept the results? What happens if state legislatures, for example, in 2024 refuse to accept and certify the results of a free and fair election? We can expect more chaos. We can expect more political violence. I'm greatly concerned by this, and I think a lot of other people are too.
I think so. I agree totally. I think one of the things that we can do here is not only vote, but I find the more localized the opportunity, the more hope I have. So we have to start in Jacksonville. I can lose a lot of sleep, just like you, Melissa and Parvez, over what's going to happen a week, 6 days from now. But what can we do here in Jacksonville to combat that?
I think no matter how the elections turn out, the fear so many have is that there will be more violence, particularly since we saw just the other day a man who was radicalized by far-right propaganda and disinformation tried to attack the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, but instead attacked her husband with a hammer in their home in California.
Yeah, think about it. Nancy Pelosi is number two in the line for the presidency.
It was an assassination attempt.
It was.
Yeah.
And it is being normalized because there are statements and tweets by many Republican leadership. There have been many that have condemned it, and rightfully so, but many that have kind of dismissed it.
Or even laughed about it, upsetting, and I think, for anyone who doesn't want to see this become normalized.
Exactly. And there was a statement yesterday from the Republican candidate for governor in Wisconsin where he said that if you elect Republicans, you don't have to worry about electing Republicans again. I'm paraphrasing again, that he's pretty much saying that once you elect us, it'll be done. We right now in the Supreme Court.
By that he meant we will have permanent one-party control of this state.
Exactly. And right now in the Supreme Court, there is a case about the independent legislature theory that will completely upend American democracy. The checks and balances will be completely upended, and all elections will go into the hand of the legislature.
That's what I was getting at, that there's the potential in 2024 that a number of states, depending on how the election goes, would just refuse to certify the results, which is their constitutional obligation.
Yeah, and it is not a hypothetical anymore.
Yeah, it's not. 549-2937. Andy in Riverside. Hi, Andy. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to kind of touch on what your guests have already pointed out, that scapegoating, anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim immigrant, Jim Crow against African-Americans have historically been driven from the top down, have been historically led by the leadership at the top to mobilize their base and to gain and continue to hold power. And that's what's happening right now in the United States again. As it's been pointed out, when Trump came in with his whistleblowing, Mexican immigrants, Muslims, third world countries, the bleep countries, he knew what he was doing, and the Republican Party has decided that it works, and they've embraced it. Shamefully, but true. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me point out, if I may, Kyle Reese, that your organization, One Jax, is a bipartisan organization.
Right.
And you are not here to advocate only for the views of Democrats or independents. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I would say what we need, whether Republican or Democrat, we need courage. Because fear is the predominant factor that is leading to much of what we're talking about today. And someone, no matter who that is, he or she must have courage to step forth and say, this is wrong. And what's deeply troubling to me is a lot of the statements that are made, people behind closed doors know it's wrong. They say it's wrong, but public facing, they lose
Give
their
me
courage.
An example of that. You don't have to name names.
Well, but I will talk about our conversation that we had with Amanda Tyler about white Christian nationalism last week. She tells a story of giving testimony before a U.S. Senate committee, and one senator who played for the cameras said one thing and then came to her and said, you know, really what you're doing, you're right, but, you know, I want to win.
But when you make those kinds of statements to the public, knowing that they are not accurate, knowing that they radicalize vulnerable or mentally disturbed people, that leads to violence. As we just witnessed with the assassination attempt on the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, I mean, like One Jax, Interfaith Center for Northeast Florida is also a nonpartisan organization. But being nonpartisan does not mean that we do not call out the problem where the problem exists. And right now, there is no equivalence between the way, let's say, the Democratic Party has handled some of the anti-Semitic things that have happened inside their party members versus how the Republican Party has handled it. I'll give you two clear examples. I mean, Kyle, as a Christian man, has spoken out forcefully against white Christian nationalism. I, as a Muslim man, have repeatedly spoken out against Islamist threats to this country and to global national security. That's the kind of courage that is needed from people who are representatives, who are part of the community that they are. If there is hate coming from inside their community, then they need to step up and talk about it. I'll give you two examples of this. When Representative Ilhan Omar made anti-Semitic comments, not only did her party...
A Muslim member of Congress.
One of the first Muslim women to be elected to the U.S. Congress, not only did her party censure her, she accepted her mistake. She apologized for what she did. She accepted her mistake, and she took the censure the way it was intended to be taken. In contrast, when Marjorie Taylor Greene made anti-Semitic statements, there was no similar kind of outrage from the Republican side. So while being nonpartisan is important for us as organizations, we cannot gloss over the reality that our communities are dealing with today.
A listener says, he emails the show, as we rightly condemn this hideous act, we cannot apply censorship to what we are against, even if it is disgusting. This speech is protected by the First Amendment, the anti-Semitic hate speech. That's what he's referring to. And that, of course, is the beauty of our system. As hard as it can be sometimes to accommodate this hateful speech, it's legal under our system, Kyle.
It is. And there is the undergirding of that freedom. You know, David Brooks talks about this moment in history and says this is really a moment when we're going to decide who we are as a nation. And I would argue that right now is one of the many opportunities that we have to decide who are we as a community. Yes, that's free speech, what happened in the overpass. We know that. But are we going to be satisfied with that? Are we going to say, oh, that's just a one-off, it's a fringe group? Or are we going to say that we have a compelling vision of what we want to be going forward? And I think that's one of the things that's missing in our politics is, you know, a win at all cost, and the caller a few moments ago talked about scapegoating. Well, scapegoating happens when you have no ideas or vision about what you're going toward or moving toward. And so you have to have an enemy in order to justify your actions or your elections.
Morgan in St. Augustine. Hi, Morgan. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that hate does not make America great. We just need to learn that hate is never the solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Lots of emails, tweets. A listener tweets me to say, he says, there is at least one radio show in the Duval market that promotes anti-Jewish conspiracy theories. They are always harping on the Rothschilds, George Soros, and a cabal of globalist bankers. When we hear globalists, we can usually assume that the speaker is anti-Semitic or is at least repeating anti-Semitic tropes. Thank you for that. Julie tweets the show, whether it's anti-Jewish, anti-Black, anti-LGBT, hate is hate. White Christian nationalism is giving cover to white supremacists. Richard tweets us, how is it that Black America was able to endure more than 400 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow laws, decades of lynchings, church bombings, and the burning down of entire cities? And not once did anybody ever say we were running the risk of losing our democracy.
Well, that is a true statement. I mean, communities, African-American communities particularly, have endured so much. And they're enduring so much as we speak right now in our city, as their votes are being diluted, as their communities still have to deal with the unfulfilled promises of consolidation. And yet, the threat against democracy has not delivered for so many, particularly in the Black community. Mm-hmm. And yet, the threat against democracy is not coming from that community. In fact, they are the one who are pushing the country towards greater democracy, greater recognition of people's freedoms. And it is a sad commentary on where we are in this country, but it is also a reflection of the fact that we have not really addressed the ills of our history. At this moment, we are living in a state that the state is telling its students that you do not have to learn history if it offends you. Well, if history is offensive, then you have to learn that history.
Or you are condemned to repeat it, somebody once said.
Exactly.
A wise person once said. On Facebook, Lisa says, our city leadership has been tolerant of white supremacy. At city council, they show more respect to the red shirt wearing white supremacists than those asking to remove the Confederate monuments. The Nazis modeled their hate propaganda on the South's history of oppression. Jacksonville leaders need to clearly refute white supremacy and follow through, not with tepid words, but with a course of action. Of course, that would require a lot of political courage.
It would indeed, yes. But the opportunity is before us. And while hoping not to be naive, I do think it's interesting that Parvez and I sit here as representatives of interfaith organizations, and a central tenet of faith, no matter the faith or worldview, is the possibility of transformation. We can't be satisfied individually with who we are. We have work to do, and we can't be satisfied with who our community is.
Here's a question from Jane. Coming together at this vigil is an echo chamber. How do we really change the root causes and the sources of this hate? What can one person do? She says.
Well, it starts with voting. One person can certainly vote, and every vote does count, and it does matter, particularly in close elections, as we would be experiencing this coming November. But it is more than that. I mean, yes, sometimes I am a critic of interfaith activity that I'm part of, that too often we do preach to the choir. We are unable to reach those parts of the community that we would like to draw into more meaningful conversations. But it is not for lack of trying. That much I can tell. As being part of the leadership of interfaith work in the city for well over two decades, I know that we are trying to reach as many people as possible and draw them into productive conversations across our differences. But it does require amplification. When sometimes we do events like today, this morning you are amplifying the vigil that we will be having tomorrow. But more often than not, many times when we do have interfaith events, they simply don't get covered. So the broader community never hears about the many good things that are happening in the community, and we then begin to obsess over the few incidents that seem to divide us.
And if you're not convinced by the moral argument, Amy tweets us and says, what businesses will want to relocate here? With this kind of blatant rhetoric, they won't be able to attract the workforce they desire. So making the case, Kyle, that there's an economic argument to ridding the community of this hate. So with all of that said, can you guys once again let everyone know how they can join the event tomorrow?
So tomorrow night, 5:30 at James Weldon Johnson Park, we'll have representatives from the Jewish religious community, the Jewish community. But what's very important that we felt like as we planned this event is this is a time for the community to surround the Jewish community, just as it's time for the communities to surround the African-American community in times of hate and struggle. So you will see a broad swath of the community saying, this is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. And I want to just quickly reference the previous comment. Pay attention to what's happening in the community. I would tell your listener, there are many initiatives that are ongoing. Our organization works in middle and high schools seeking to celebrate the diversity of our community. But you're going to be hearing more initiatives coming out from a lot of the great organizations that do work here.
Well, I appreciate you both joining us today. Kyle Reese, One Jax, Parvez Ahmed, Interfaith Foundation of Northeast Florida. Meet up with them tomorrow night, 5:30 at James Weldon Johnson Park downtown. Thanks.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead. Later, we'll brighten things up a bit with some good news. We need it for your Wednesday, but up next.
This particular legislation will now deliver on that promise of giving veterans the health care and the benefits in a timely fashion.
Getting aid to sick veterans exposed to burn pits under the new PACT Act. We'll tell you how. Next. Welcome back. Well, President Biden recently signed important new legislation into law. It's to help veterans exposed to toxic chemicals in burn pits in overseas wars. Now, if you're eligible, the VA says right now is the time to file a claim to get help under what's known as the PACT Act. For more, I spoke with Terrence Hayes, press secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Hey, Terrence, good to be with you as we talk about this important legislation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Melissa. It's an honor.
So can you begin by explaining what does the PACT Act mean for veterans in our area? We have a lot of veterans in North Florida and across the country.
We do have quite a few thousands of veterans in the Northeast area of Florida, and I'm a you know, native of Jacksonville myself, so this really impacts many of us. This is a historic piece of legislation that President Biden signed into law August the 10th, and you know, we've chatted about burn pits a lot and environmental exposures a lot, and this particular legislation will now deliver on that promise of giving veterans the health care and the benefits in a timely fashion that they have deserved for quite some time. I mean, we're going back to even Vietnam-era veterans, Gulf War-era veterans, and obviously our post-9/11 combat veterans. But this piece of legislation is vital, and the one major thing that we're asking veterans now who may have been impacted by burn pits or any environmental exposure while they were deployed in the Central Command area is to please, please, please file your claim today.
It's my understanding more than 100,000 claims have already been filed. Is that right?
Melissa, as of last week, we are close to 113,000. PACT Act related claims in receipt since August the 10th. That is a lot of claims, but by no means that's not enough. There's still veterans out there who have been impacted and their survivors. I want to make sure I bring that in as well, because unfortunately we have lost some of these veterans due to some of these conditions, and their survivors are eligible for benefits as well. So it's critical that our veterans and survivors who may have been impacted by this to please jump in, you know, put your name out there and add your claim to this list, because, you know, VA is ready to adjudicate claims starting January 1st. But the critical thing is that you have a year time frame between August the 10th of this year, and August the 10th of next year to file that claim, so your money is backdated to August the 10th of 2022. So that's critical.
And we're talking about a dozen types of cancer and other respiratory illnesses linked to exposure to burn pits in the Gulf War, in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. As you said, some Vietnam veterans are also falling into this bucket. And how can all of these veterans seek care for their medical concerns that are related to the PACT Act?
Melissa, there's 23 new presumptive conditions, and you can find those conditions at va.gov/PACT. Again, there's 23 new presumptive conditions, and presumptive means that we presume that if you have this condition, that you received it as part of your time in service. So no longer will VA require you to prove that you had these conditions. It's presumed automatically now that you have this condition because of your time in service. So again, file your claim today, and if you aren't enrolled in VA healthcare, you are eligible to enroll in VA healthcare immediately. Please visit your local VA medical center as soon as possible, but you can find out more information at va.gov/PACT.
va.gov/PACT. Let me ask you too, Terrence. One famous guy that helped get this legislation passed, of course, was entertainer and activist John Stewart, almost shaming Congress into doing the right thing for veterans. What are your thoughts about his activism and why it took that kind of pressure and that kind of publicity to get it across the line, across the finish line?
Yeah, Melissa, you bring a valuable point up. John Stewart was an invaluable individual in this, you know, effort to get this legislation done. And, you know, I, as a veteran who has served in Iraq, can thank him for his tireless, you know, contribution to making this happen. We know that he was instrumental in his efforts for those involved in 9/11 receiving the health care and benefits that they deserved as well. I'm talking our firefighters and our first responders on site. And again, he did the same thing. He worked in concert with many veterans advocates to get this done. You know, faceless names that you will never see, but these individuals worked through him because of his voice and his platform to get this done. And we're excited that, you know, we were able to chat with him. The Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Dennis McDonough, met with him multiple times leading up to the passing of this legislation because we knew the importance behind this. But we are very thankful for his advocacy and for him being that out front individual to get this deal done.
And how big a priority is the PACT Act for the Biden administration?
Yeah, it was one of the number one priorities for our veterans for President Biden. He said that on the campaign trail. He said that on day one in his inaugural speech. And he has shown that with us getting this deal done for our veterans. As many people know, he believes that his son, Bo, who came in, who served as well, potentially passed because of one of these presumed conditions. And it's vital that folks understand that the president didn't do this because of his son. The president pushed hard and tirelessly for this legislation because of his commitment to our veterans who go in harm's way each and every day to protect and defend our country. So this was number one on his plate, and we're thankful that we were able to get this done. And now it's time for VA to implement and to actually deliver on that promise, deliver on the benefits and the health care to our veterans, and we're ready to do that.
It's va.gov to apply under the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act or the PACT Act. And I want to thank you, Terrence. He's Terrence Hayes, Press Secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa, for having me.
All right, everybody, right now we want to tell you about something amazing. Eat Your Yard Jacks is celebrating their second annual Persimmon Festival Sunday. Now, Eat Your Yard Jacks is a nonprofit edible plant nursery and education center. And you can guess what they do by the title Eat Your Yard. They want you to plant your own fruits and vegetables. This year, they're going to kick things off with a farm-to-table dinner hosted by the great Dennis Chan of Blue Bamboo. Doesn't that sound amazing? Tim Armstrong is the founder of Eat Your Yard Jacks, and he's here now to give us the delicious details. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here, Melissa.
Thanks it's so for good inviting to see us. You. Oh, it's great to see you. And you brought a beautiful bouquet of flowers, so thank you for that. So tell us about the Persimmon Festival. This sounds like a lot of fun.
The Persimmon Festival is a lot of fun, and we started it last year. I have a dear friend in Western Maryland someone who has become a dear friend. His name is Michael Judd, and he wrote a book called The Love of Pawpaws, and he also wrote another book that we carry in our stores. Well, he has a Pawpaw Fest in Western Maryland, and pawpaws, if you don't know, is a little bit like persimmons. It's kind of an unknown fruit, but it's North America's largest native fruit. So here's a fruit the size of a mango that grows in, you know, North America. Actually, one of the varieties of pawpaw is named after what's called mango pawpaw because it looks a little bit like and tastes a little bit like a mango, but it was originated in Tifton, Georgia, just up the street from us. And so anyway, I attended his festival with the idea of maybe I should do a festival kind of like that.
And here we have it, the Persimmon Festival. You're going to have a full day of fun stuff, gardening, permaculture, all kinds of things people can come out and taste and learn. What all's on the bill here?
On the bill here, so we're starting out by a keynote address from Mark Winnie, who wrote Food Town USA a couple of years back, 7 Unlikely Cities That Are Changing the Way We Eat. And a lot of people don't know, but Jacksonville was in that book. And myself at Eat Your Yard Jacks, Very Good Farms, Nathan Ballantyne with Man in Overalls was in here. So we'll have copies of this book available, even signed copies available. So that'll kick it off. We'll have backyard organic blueberry production from the Josh from the Blueberry Ranch in Yulee. There'll be backyard solar practical uses from Logan with Pine Ridge Products. The Truth About Water with Brantley with Ancient Alchemy Apothecary. We'll have backyard homesteading with Rachel from Stillwell Farms. Backyard bees from Nassau County Beekeepers Association. Mallory over at White Harvest Farm is going to come do a presentation on fermentation. Noah with Harmony Mushrooms is going to do healthy gourmet mushrooms you can grow. I'll do a tour of the whole facility. There'll be organic vegetable production from my friend Brian Lipinski at Down to Earth Farms. Backyard turkeys and chickens with Jamie.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's fun.
It does sound like fun. People can learn so much about not just keeping chickens, as you said, but growing their own groceries. And then the big dinner. Tell us about the farm-to-table dinner.
Well, Dennis Chang has always been a fan and supporter of my projects at the school. He was just a dear supporter at the dinners we did for the Very Good Farms project I headed up. But he has offered to do us a dinner for our Eat Your Yard project in November the 5th from 5:30 to 8. We're doing a farm-to-table dinner. I gave Dennis a list of all the things that were available from our farm, and he created a 4-course masterpiece using all the things from our farm. If you haven't looked at some of the things on the website, please do. I'm reaching out to some of our corporate entities. I know there's some entities out there that want to do something nice for their employees and buy a block of these tickets. We would love to move a few more tickets and have some more people. It is an intimate affair. It's going to be at the farm, and it'll be all lit up and beautiful. This is a time of year where bugs are not so prevalent at the farm, and it feels a little cool, and so it's going to be
perfect
beautiful.
Fall evening.
It is going to be a perfect fall evening. I also have a limited number of free tickets to like-minded organizations that want to connect and network with us, so reach out at theeerjacks@gmail.com, and we'll make sure that a representative from your organization is able to come.
It's eateryourjacks.org to learn more about the Persimmon Festival and the farm-to-table dinner this Saturday. And you know, as you pointed out in the book Food Town USA, which Jacksonville is featured in, there's a real movement here in this city, this community, to local sustainable agriculture and teaching people to learn these age-old techniques themselves.
There is, Melissa, and I'm, you know, pleased to have been one of the, you know, people that was part of that movement. You know, I've been doing this since 2011. I graduated from Will Allen's Commercial Urban Agriculture Program in 2011, and I used that information to start Very Good Farms for North Florida School of Special Education.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been a farmer's market participant at the Beaches Green Market for 10 years. I was a cornerstone vendor up there. I've networked with Alvarez Farms. Charles does a great job and is helping out with this event. I've networked with Francisco at KYV Farm, and he and I talk back and forth. And I went and visited him in February when I did a class in Puerto Rico on mushroom production. So all those connections and networks. So you were talking about your kids earlier. So actually starting this entity was, had to do with my kids. So I wanted them to have a place to learn about hard work and growing food. And
it's hard work. I'll tell you that.
It is very hard work.
I come from farming people. So yeah, it's hard.
Yes. People don't know.
But it's so rewarding. And there's nothing like growing your own little vegetable garden and then eating your own produce. Although the problem I had was a bunch of raccoons ate mine. So I need to fix that. But anyway, if you're just tuning in, this is what you need to check out for this Saturday. It's Eat Your Yard Jacks, their second annual Persimmon Festival, with a fabulous farm-to-table dinner cooked up by celebrity chef Dennis Chan of Blue Bamboo. Go to eateyouryardjacks.org for all the information. And I want to thank you so much for coming by. It's just going to be a great evening.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm so pleased to be here.
It's going to be wonderful. Again, eateyouryardjacks.org. And thanks for the flowers, too.
Oh, you're welcome.
They're lovely. We're going to enjoy those. Okay, a quick break and some more tasty items on our Wednesday menu in just a bit as we go all around town to tell you what's good this week. So keep listening.
Lee & Kate's Glass, family-owned and operated for 95 years. Lee & Kate's Glass is your source for upgrading your home's glass, from shower doors and mirrors to windows and tabletops. Learn more at leeandkatesglass.com. St. Johns County Cultural Events presents Fort Mosey Jazz and Blues Series, February 10th to 19th, 2023. Live performances from artists like Gladys Knight, Mavis Staples, and Christone Kingfish Ingram. Tickets available Friday at discoverfortmosey.com.
Join WJCT Public Media for an evening with Sonia Manzano. Sonia, best known for playing Maria on Sesame Street and the creator and executive producer of Alma's Way, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for a dynamic, thought-provoking conversation. Thursday, November 17th at WJCT Studios. Reception at 6 p.m., conversation at 7 p.m. For tickets and additional information, go to wjct.org/events. Sponsored in part by PNC Bank and Jimenez Law Firm.
Next time on The World, we're talking bananas. A company in Canada is marketing the fruit in a new way by raising the price.
We want to be a brand that is based on sustainable sourcing, sustainable economically, socially, and environmentally.
They're making sure farmers in tropical countries get a living wage. The Fair Trade Banana on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
20 years ago, the Supreme Court said colleges could consider race as a factor when deciding which students to admit. But affirmative action is before the court again, and today's more conservative bench appears to be changing its mind.
I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means.
What would college admissions look like if affirmative action is reversed? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville Dance Theater is debuting its new season this month, a premiere of three new works celebrating women in the arts, with the first show November 12th at the Wilson Center for the Arts. I got a preview from their executive director, Katie McCon.
We are going to be premiering a couple of new works, one by an African-American choreographer named Ebony Amos, and her work really draws from Black history, Black music, personal movement, and she created a beautiful new work on our company that really acts as this living archive of female voices. The whole show is really a celebration of women in the performing arts. We're an all-female company, and we're just really excited to celebrate the women that have made the work on us, that have helped us get where we are. And then the other work that we're premiering is by a woman named Bliss Kohlmeyer from the Tampa area, and her work is really kinetic and exciting, and really about kind of the ways in which women are pulled in lots of different directions. And we're really excited to be at the Wilson Center. It's a beautiful theater, and it's really the place where the kind of modern dance that we make is supposed to be seen. So we do a lot of dance education and dance outreach. One of our main programs is called Embody Now, and it's really about creating access to people who may not have access to movement and the benefits of movement and dance in terms of personal health and wellness. And then we do a lot of dance education outreach in schools as well through our Creative Dance in Schools program, where we really focus on kind of the benefits for education for children. And so that's another one of our staple outreach programs in the city. So we started about 10 years ago. A couple of us just found ourselves here as professors in dance, but still really wanted to be creating and performing choreography. And we found that there wasn't really a company or a context or a community for that here. And so, you know, nature's a vacuum. So we created it, right, out of sort of beginning sort of selfishly. But we really grew and started hiring more and more dancers. And now we're 10 years old and we have a company of, you know, 13 women, and some of them have moved from out of state to Jacksonville to dance with our company. Last year we hired 4 young dancers right out of college programs. And so Jacksonville Dance Theater has really become a professional modern dance company in Jacksonville. And we're creating jobs, and we're a place where we're really hoping to be a source of not only like artistic and creative opportunities, but work. And, you know, we know that the arts are an economic driver in our city and in our communities. And so Jacksonville Dance Theater has really grown in those terms. And we really just hope to keep growing in that space and create jobs for dancers and prevent talent flight and contribute to the growing and vibrant and robust art and culture scene that is really thriving in Jacksonville, and dance, you know, really is a part of that, and I believe is an important art form that communicates a lot of important things about our lives. You know, dance is a live art form, and it helps us reflect on our own living.
Shout out to teachers at J. Allen Accent Elementary School. They've organized a fundraiser, Rock Accent to Fight Hunger, at their fall festival November 4th. Apparently, one teacher in particular, Mr. Tintle, put this on. Congrats, and thank a teacher, folks. Well, in the wake of hateful anti-Semitic displays, a special opportunity to support Jacksonville's Jewish community, the JCA Cultural Arts Festival. I got a preview from organizer Whitney Coven. Hi, Whitney. Good to be with you, and I'm so glad we can spotlight the JCA Cultural Arts Festival, particularly in the wake of... Okay, that is the wrong cut, but the JCA Cultural Arts Festival is coming up. Check it out at jcajax.org. Apologies, folks. We put an unedited cut up. jcajax.org. Check that out. And finally, this hour, the Whiskey, Wine, and Wildlife Fest this weekend in Volano Beach. For more about that, here's festival organizer Jan Gurley.
It was just an opportunity that we couldn't refuse. And to have the event, you know, the Friday night event is going to be on the Volano Pier, which is amazing because it's going to be like right at sunset. It's absolutely gorgeous. And then it's also going to be a pig picking. About 150 different varieties of beverages and pig picking and Cisco and Publix. And it's going to be a really neat, a happy hour from 6:30 to 8:30. And then Saturday, November 5th, is the main event. And that's going to be like a huge block party on Vivian Browning Avenue, which is a street adjacent to Volano Road, the main drag. And it's just going to be so neat. It's about 200 varieties of wine, beer, and spirits. And we've got 15 of Northeast Florida's best restaurants. We had a best taste competition. So we've got all the award-winning taste, you know, the gold medals, the silver medals, the bronze medal winners will be sampling their dishes that they won the awards for. So it's just going to, and of course, we'll have GTM Research Reserve out there with some wildlife demonstrations. So lots of fun. Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun. And guess what? We've got a pair of tickets to give away to the main event Saturday at the Whiskey, Wine, and Wildlife Festival in Volano Beach. If you want to go, drop us an email right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and just put whiskey in the subject line. We'll pick a winner at random. And thanks for listening. Thanks, too, to David Luckin, Heather Schatz, Isabella Da Silva, Michelle Quorum, and our intern Gary Autry helping out today, too. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back again tomorrow, as always, at 9 a.m. In the meantime, make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.